listening to Vet Candy.
Hi, this is Dr. Jessica Turner, and you are listening to Living Well with Dr. Jessica. This is your one stop for everything health and wellness, but not just what meets the eye, not just nutrition or fitness. It's everything in between. We pull in the best of the best within the field and get to know them and just share their knowledge. And I told y'all, if you listened to last episode where we dug into some financial nitty gritty, that we were going to kind of continue into that, but in a different aspect. And so I hope y'all are excited. I know it's kind of like a topic that none of us really want to tackle, but we know it's necessary. And so I feel like you're going to leave this call just so empowered to take control and like you made a new friend in the process. So our guest today is Paul Gazella. He is a CPA specializing in tax and financial consulting. He is the owner of Gazella Consulting LLC, a New Jersey-based accounting and consulting firm, and he also offers business evaluations if that is something that you are looking for assistance in. Can you please help me in welcoming our guest?
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
If you are like me, you want to improve your skills, and that means improving your clinical confidence. That's why Vet Candy created a master course in respiratory disease. The master course is taught by a board-certified criticalist and delivers a thorough evaluation of the science and clinical practice skills needed to master respiratory disease from diagnosis and management to client counseling. Plus, when you complete the course, you earn a certificate of completion as a certified respiratory educator and exclusive tools to celebrate, recognize, and share your accomplishment. And what's even more exciting? The course is free and provides race and New York State approved continuing education credits. This master course is brought to you by Trudell Animal Health, the makers of the AeroCat Chamber. You can start helping your patients breathe better by taking it for free today at myvetcandy.com/respiratory.
It's a pleasure to have you today, Paul.
Thank you, Jessica.
I would love to start. So I've been hearing so much about how you just have a heart for veterinarians and what we do, and a lot of that kind of spawns from your love for animals. And so I would just love to get to know you a little bit better and hear a little bit more about your story and what sparked that love and what brought your wonderful collection of zoo magazines behind you. I could see Paul, I know you can't, but he has some beautiful pictures of our zoo animals behind him. And so let's hear a little bit more about you and kind of what's brought you here.
So I think probably the answer to my what brought about my love for animals was the fact that my parents never wanted one. So it was something that I always wanted that I wasn't able to have for a long time. I did bring home a kitten once that lasted in our house a couple of days, and then my parents made me bring it back. And so finally they said, we don't want to care for the animals. So when you have a place of your own, you can get whatever you want. And literally the day after we bought our house, we started looking for animals. And within a month, we adopted our first dog. I do think that if I didn't become an accountant, my fallback was going to be a veterinarian. I'm not sure that necessarily means that would have been the plan B as in an easier choice, but I do think that I would have been really happy in that profession. I really do have a love of animals.
So I'm curious as to, did you always know that you wanted to go into finances? Did you ever toy around with getting more serious with veterinary medicine? Or was it always kind of a plan B?
No, I think it was kind of one of those romantic things in my head. I was pretty good at math in elementary school. So everyone just kept saying, you should be an accountant, you should be an accountant. I ended up doing a report, a vocational report in the seventh grade. And I selected accountant and I said, all right, this makes sense for me. I understood it. I do like things to be clean. So I like when you know that you're wrong if the solution doesn't work out. So I think it generally fit my personality. I figured that out at a relatively young age, and then it just kind of carried me through high school, college, and now my career.
I think you made a smart choice just from the little bit you just shared, because there's so much gray in veterinary medicine. I think that's part of the fun, but it's part of the frustration, especially when our clients come in and they kind of want things to be black and white and they want a clear answer. I know I'm grateful for people like you, because I'm sure I could speak for the majority of my colleagues when I say that I got out of school, vet school, pretty clueless when it came to finances. I kind of touched on that last week. I think we had 2 hours, you know, covering, you know, what a budget was, which I'm grateful they did that. So it wasn't the first time I was hearing it when my husband brought it up, you know, years into our marriage. But I feel like I had no idea what the income and debt ratio was. And my student loans were nothing compared to a lot of my colleagues. Luckily, I was in state and some other factors. But I think it's safe to say that that's such a huge stressor within our profession. Whether you know what you're getting into or not, I think that's the first kind of clue. Do your homework, you know, before you make a decision of the route you're going to go, and know what you're looking at with your numbers, and be smart about things like budgeting early on. But I think so many of us are faced with like this mountain when you kind of just say finances in general, or student loan debt, or debt in general. It just seems like this mountain that we're never going to be able to get on the top of. And we may see like a handful of people shouting out that they paid off their student loans every once in a while. I'm grateful I'm in one of those categories, but I think for so many, it seems like something that's just not going to ever happen for them. And so I'm curious as to, you know, what kind of conversations you have with, you know, your clients that come to you that may be in that situation. Maybe they're just starting to take some control over their finances and it just feels like a big mountain. Do you have any advice?
I do. And the reality is that it is so overwhelming. And I don't think this is limited to veterinarians and veterinary students. I think one of the reasons we're hearing all over the news about free community college education and pay assisting with the pay down of college loans, outstanding balances, that was one of the big topics following President Biden's election. That was one of his agenda items. I think the problem is that the cost of education is becoming so expensive, and the increase in what someone can make from their education, that gap is narrowing. So it feels so overwhelming. And the reality is that what you have to kind of do is take a deep breath, look at your whole entire financial picture, not just the student loan piece, and then kind of put that puzzle together so that you can live the lifestyle you want. That might mean making some choices. Not everybody can live the entire lifestyle they want, but maybe you can pick and choose what is important to you and what you can live without, so that you can dedicate your resources to eliminating that debt. And it is a slow and steady process. It's not something that happens overnight.
Yeah, I agree. And I think where if somebody is familiar with, you know, budgeting and strategically paying off debt, I think we kind of have this very stiff view of like you're eating ramen noodles and like you never leave your house but to go to work. You know, like it's so restrictive, I think some people have in their mind, if you like that's your focus. And while people can do that, I think it's what makes it so daunting for some and makes them kind of just really not want to start because it sounds miserable, right? And so I think just finding some kind of an in-between, and like you said, just sitting down and saying, okay, what am I okay with giving up for, you know, at least a little while to save some money and to be able to allocate that towards maybe making a bigger payment or making an extra payment. And what is something that truly, you know, brings me joy that if I eliminate it, like I'm going to end up resenting what I'm having to do. You know, I feel like it kind of causes a snowball effect into the things that are forcing us to focus on our income, which, you know, for many of us is our profession. And it's such a slippery slope if we let that become like a negative aspect of what we do. Because I do think that's a hot topic when I plug into veterinary communities and people are asked, you know, would you do it again? Would you be a vet again? There's a very high percentage that say they wouldn't. And a very high percentage of that is because of finance is the bottom line. You know, whatever situation they're in, they feel like they can't get control over it, and it's restricting other aspects of their life. Do you have, if somebody's listening and they're like, okay, what's one like action step that I could do today to give me a small win? You know, we talk about it seeming so overwhelming, and I think anything in life, you know, if we're not careful, it does feel like it's something we can never tackle unless we take it one step at a time. And so if somebody's listening and they feel that way, but they understand that that one step is going to lead to another, and it's going to gain give them the confidence to do more and more and gain more and more control, what is the thing that you feel like makes the biggest impact for someone that's just trying to get a better grasp, whether it's on debt or just their finances in general?
This applies to a savings component of our lifestyle as well as debt payment. I'll kind of talk a little bit about some of the financial strategies of both, but the reality is that you can probably find, most people can probably find $25 a month to extra to either put in their savings or to put towards an outstanding debt. So when you think about $25, I remember thinking that that was dinner and a movie many, many years ago. That's not dinner and a movie anymore. But $25, I'm sure you can find $25. And let's just say any kind of debt, whether it be a credit card payment, whether it be your student loan, or even if it's just a payment to yourself, where you're, whatever you're saving now, whether it's zero or thousands of dollars a month, add $25 to that and put it in your savings plan. Add $25 to that or put it towards a credit card payment. What you will find is that after a few months, you don't even miss that $25. And then you can start to think about, hey, maybe there's another $25. And there's so many little things that you can do throughout your week. Maybe you don't go to Starbucks 7 days a week. Maybe you choose to make coffee at home and bring it in a tumbler while you're driving to work rather than stopping. And you will see those little things add up. $25 a month is $300 a year. That is not a lot of money, but it can give you that first step towards that snowball approach, that $25 turns into $50 a month to $100 a month and maybe even more. And you start to pare back your lifestyle and get rid of some unnecessary expenses that maybe you get a little bit of enjoyment out of, but you won't miss if you don't spend that money in that way. And it goes towards really securing or at least stabilizing your financial position.
I love that. And you're making me think of, you know, the first couple of years that I was out of school. My husband and I graduated at the same time. He's a pharmacist and he had a whole load of debt, you know, that we kind of combined together. And I remember, you know, going to work and I'd always pack my own lunch and bring my own coffee. And, you know, those things that you don't really think of, but everybody else bought their lunch every single, you know, day. And I just remember thinking, man, that's a lot of money every week that y'all are spending. And granted, these were mostly, you know, young kids that didn't have the debt load that I had and they were in different situations. But at the same time, I'm like, think about what you would be able to do with that money if you just brought your own lunch, even if it was just one day. So I love that you talk about that. You also made me think of, and I don't remember the term that was used, but we loosely followed a debt relief kind of program when we were in the process of paying off our debt. And they talked about finding those cushions within your spending that you really have no idea are there. And one of the examples that was given is, if you open your pantry, how many options do you have for breakfast? If you open your freezer, if you're opening your fridge, you know, and people were naming off so many. It's like, man, we have like 20 options of breakfast if you count like all the different kinds of cereals we have. And it's like, what if we just pare that down to 5, you know, and stopped buying so many options? We don't need everything we see in the grocery store, everything we see, you know, on TV. And I think that's the world we live in. It's everywhere. It's on billboard. You know, we're going to always see these advertisements that are going to kind of pull us in and make us want whatever they're, you know, selling. But just being aware of those tactics and saying, no, you know, I don't need that. Like, or, you know, make yourself think about it for a minute before actually like impulse buying. I know that's something that I struggle with.
You're absolutely right. And the stores You brought up impulse buying. The stores have research. They know exactly the colors, the display type, what's going to attract your attention so that it's a mindless, you don't even realize that you're grabbing it, throwing it on the belt, and then paying for it. And it's $5, $10 a week that you're throwing on the belt that's really not important. So I mentioned the coffee as, you know, maybe you don't go to Starbucks 7 days a week, or maybe you cut it back entirely. I should really come clean. I don't drink any coffee. So that's an easy one for me. But I do love to eat. And my wife and I, my kids are a little bit older now. So my wife and I have a little bit more freedom than we used to. And we enjoy going out to dinner or bringing food in. But the reality is that we also love to cook. Both of us love to find something interesting. We love to go shopping for it and prepare it together. And, you know, that's a way, rather than going out to a restaurant where you're paying for the two of us $100, we could buy all the materials, have a date night together, make it for half that price. Now, maybe we can take that, the balance of that, and put that towards debt or savings. That's just another easy example of not only are you saving money, but you're not really depriving yourself. And maybe you get to do something with somebody you care about.
Yeah, it creates a deeper connection on other levels. You're making me think of when all of this first started with COVID. When we would look at our budget, we were like, man, we got so much money we normally don't have because we can't do anything. You know, like in some regards, it was good because it kind of forced us to dial things back. But in reality, I think we've kind of adopted that mindset of what you just kind of shared. You know, taking those things that you love to do, whether it's buy Starbucks coffee or go out to eat often, and getting creative with how you could tweak them and, you know, recreate it in a way that possibly leads to a better connection with your spouse or a friend or whatever it may be, whether you put on a pot of coffee and have a friend over versus just driving through the drive-thru. And with saying that, I will say that when I did become more aware of these spendings that were kind of just mindless and reserve them for occasional, you know, indulgences, whatever you want to call it, you're so much more likely to actually enjoy what you have if you're not just, you know, like a zombie going through the drive-thru every day. While I don't have a Starbucks around, I am very guilty when I was first out of vet school of stopping on my way home and getting, I don't know, whatever iced coffee, whatever concoction it was from McDonald's, I mean, every single day. While I thought I was doing good by bringing my own lunch, I was blowing it by, you know, buying my coffee on the way home. And so I love that we're having, you know, these conversations about those little things because they're really doable if you start, you know, opening your eyes and looking for them. I want to take a quick break for our listeners and we'll come back. And I'd love to dig into some of the things that are out there, whether it's current programs or different things that are being offered for debt relief, whether it's specifically within the veterinary community or not, because that's been an area that I feel like I've been completely unaware of until my last call. And I think our listeners would love to hear your take on that. So we'll be back in a minute.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
Hey, this is Dr. Quincy Hawley, and I'm here to tell you about a new show. It's Vet Candy Rounds with the Hawleys. That's right, Dr. Tierra, the love of my life, and I have teamed up to bring you the most fascinating cases in the world. Check us out on iTunes, Spotify, or a podcast platform of your choice, only on Vet Candy Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We are here with Paul Gazella, and he is digging into all things finances with us. And he is going to give his insight into just the current situation we're living in when it's referring to debt relief and just different programs that are out there, whether it's specifically within veterinary medicine or not. I'm curious to hear what you know that we may not know.
Before we get into necessarily debt relief, I think it's one of the most important things that you can do as someone who owes money for, in particular, education, is to make sure you know all the details of your loan. That includes the interest rate. probably most importantly, the interest rate. But not only the interest rate, but the balance, how many years you have left on your loan, the type of loan you have. And the reason that I say that is probably the best form of relief is to refinance and lower your interest rate. So for example, let's just say you are at a loan of 7%. If you can keep everything else the same, but lower your interest rate to 5%, you can save thousands of dollars over the life of the loan. Right now, that's probably the best form of debt relief is knowing the terms of your loan and shopping to see if you can lower some of those terms. Whether primarily the interest rate, but maybe you can refinance at the same interest rate, a lower interest rate, but a shorter term. Maybe you keep your payment the same, but you're going to be paying for 3-4 years less. So I definitely want to suggest that to the listeners.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up. And you're making me think of a question. Do you recommend as like a general guideline, once you find out all that knowledge and you have all of your, you know, different forms of debt in front of you, kind of zoning in on the highest interest rate and tackling that if you have extra? Is that?
Yes. The first thing that I recommend is whatever the minimum payment is, I never recommend you make the minimum payment, particularly on a revolving credit line. So a student loan interest, a mortgage, things like that is a fixed payment schedule typically. Credit cards are revolving debt. And what they'll tell you the balance that is due, and they'll tell you the minimum that you have to make in order to be current in your agreement with the credit card company. If you make the minimum payment on your credit cards, literally you will never pay off the debt. So I never recommend you make the minimum payment. I always recommend you make as much towards the balance as you can afford. And to your question, if you have revolving debt, always allocate all of your money to eliminate that debt as quickly as possible, because that rate is typically much higher than most of the other sources of your loans, whether that be a mortgage or student loans. Typically, those rates are much lower than a credit card. So if you have high interest debt, pay that off as quickly as you can. Your point is 100% correct. If you have extra in any month, even if you don't have any credit card debt, focus on the highest interest rate first.
I'm glad you broke that down. I think it's one of those things, you know, when you know something for so long or you've done it for so long, like you don't even realize that it's like possibly advice for others. Like, I feel like that's where I am when it comes to credit card. We always pay that off every month because of what you just explained, but I never understood the reason behind it. I'm sure my husband does, but I didn't. I know that, you know, that's where you're going to kind of get not taken advantage, but because of the rates being so much higher, you, like you said, you'll be in a situation where you never pay it off. And so I'm glad you touched on that, because it's not anything that I even really think of, because it's something we automatically do. And so thank you for going into that as well. If you have anything else to add regarding that, please feel free. But I know you're looking at things in a totally different set of lenses as I am, because I just don't look at money, you know, numbers the same way as you. And so I love that you're adding in these things as you see a need.
So the one thing that I will add is, like you, I also pay my credit cards off every month. I view the credit card as a convenience for me. It's really easy. I don't have to carry a checkbook. I don't have to carry cash. I can just charge whatever I want, but I make sure that I'm spending within my means. Now, I know that's easy for me to say. Not everybody feels like they can. Not everybody earns enough to meet all of their needs in any particular month, or their income might fluctuate from month to month. So some months they can, some months they can't. My recommendation is basically to use the credit card as a convenience. There may be times where you can't do that and you need to buy something. For example, a car is not a good example because you're not charging that, but you need something in particular for your house. Your refrigerator broke and now you need to buy a $1,000 refrigerator and you just don't have $1,000 to spend. Pay off your regular spending every month and the $1,000 you charge on that card, break that up and say, I'm going to work to pay that off in 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, whatever it is. My recommendation is to use it in that way. So you live within your means on your everyday stuff, but some of the major purchases that are either a surprise or occasional, you spread out over time. That will limit how much interest you actually pay. I happen to be personally risk averse when it comes to debt. I do not like any debt. I know that from a financial perspective, some debt is good and I do have debt, but that's the one thing that keeps me up at night from a financial perspective is I don't like owing people money. It weighs on me, but I do understand the need for it. And I do have car loans. I do have a mortgage that I'm working to pay off. And you know, it's just a part of life. But to the extent you can minimize how much interest you are paying, it's going to go a long way towards improving your financial future.
I love that you mentioned your personal experience, because I think we would all love to have that burden lifted. You know, like it's a small percentage of people that don't have any debt. And I'll admit, we've been renting a very small house because we've been in the process of building, which isn't happening anymore. And so we currently don't have a mortgage or anything like that. And so for a very small amount of time, I could say like we don't have that pressure, but we're in the process of buying a home now and about to have to borrow a whole lot of money, you know? And so I know while you were talking, I was like, man, that's so much, Trey, my husband. Like that's going to end up keeping them up at night. I know it will. But I think just, again, being aware, because I feel like so many people, specifically with credit card use and things like that, they just ditch this part of life. And they take it to an extreme to where they almost rather be, I don't know, like in the dark about their current, you know, standing with their finances and in their debt load, because that's kind of become a norm for some where, oh, I'll just put it on the credit card. And it's so easy to wake up and be like, oh, what? You know? And so I love that you talk about using it for those situations where it may be an emergency, but going into it with like a game plan. And if you don't have enough of a cushion in your savings to have like an emergency fund that you could truly, you know, draw money from, and you have that credit card as kind of an emergency fund, still discussing, you know, whether it's with your significant other or just, you know, having a plan for yourself, knowing that that's going to be reserved if you have to use it for X amount, you have a plan of paying it off in this many months versus just swiping it and really not, I don't know, not giving your brain like time to register like what you just did, because it's just a swipe, right? Like there's no transaction. And I think that's why it's such a slippery slope for so many people. And they kind of feel like they woke up and, you know, they're drowning by debt.
You're absolutely right. Plan is the best word, because I, again, by nature, am a planner. I love to make lists. I love to have a game plan for just about every situation. And that, it's so important to have an understanding of your situation now and where you want to go in the future. And that's where that planning comes in. And with credit card debt, you're right. You can wake up and it all of a sudden just be out of control. Didn't start out that way. It was just kind of slowly building. And unless you have a plan, there's no way for you to keep track of that or to get ahead of that. And for that reason, maybe credit cards aren't the best for some people. If they can't manage it, you need to find a different way. That's part of making a plan, is if you know that that's not going to work for you, find something that will. I have friends that when they were first married, they were married around the same time as my wife and I, they did not manage their credit cards well. So what they did was literal cash in an envelope. And they knew that that was what they had to spend. And when you can see it tangibly, for some people that works better than it being kind of out in the ether. You don't really see that balance unless you are regularly going in and seeing how much you've charged, where you are. You know how much you have available to spend. And if you're not tracking on how much you've spent towards that, it's easy for it to get away from you.
Yeah. I also have friends that have used that system because credit cards are just, they're too much of a gamble for them. You made me think of something when we were talking about this last segment with, you know, the last year and so much uncertainty with people's job security and I'm not talking within the veterinary field per se. I'm thinking of friends that are very in tune with their finances and having conversations with them, and them having that kind of fear of getting a phone call and saying you don't have a job the next day. Do you have any advice in living in a time that seems so unpredictable with, like, how much should we be planning if we have the ability to put some towards saving? Like, I remember them throwing out, you should have so many months of your income, you know, set aside for security if you're in that position. I'm not sure if I'm, like, getting across what I'm asking you. So it's more so if you're in a good standing with paying off your debt and you are in a place where you could save. Do you have just, like, some tangible tips on our listeners to give them a little bit more security in a time that seems so uncertain when it comes to their finances and having a cushion?
Well, the problem with that is there really is no quick answer for something that's going to help you in uncertain times unless you've done the work previously. So my suggestion would be is to make a plan to start building up a war chest so that you can weather any uncertainty. I read a statistic a while back that a very, very high percentage of households in America could not withstand a surprise bill of $400. And that was startling to me because $400, unfortunately, when you own a home, $400 pops up almost every month of something that you need that you weren't planning on. So my suggestion is slowly build that war chest and be disciplined enough that it's not savings for you to then spend later. This is savings for you to protect you in the event of an emergency. We've been very lucky over the last year plus that the government decided to at least offer a little bit of help to families, individuals, with some of the stimulus money. In my lifetime, I've never seen anything like that. And there were a lot of people that either lost jobs, lost portions of their income because of the shutdowns, the government mandated shutdowns, and businesses just couldn't operate. So people, they couldn't pay their employees. So employees lost jobs or their income was cut back. And that was a great way for people to at least not lose as much. You know, to pay somebody $3,400, which is what the maximum stimulus money was for an individual, that is helpful to a lot of people, but that doesn't pay their rent for the course over the course of a year. And it looks like it's going to be at 18 months or so before we're fully reopened. That's why it's so important to do some of the work on your own.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
Hey, this is Dr. Julio Alonso. Do you want to keep up with everything Vet Med? Then check out my show on Vet Candy TV. We talk about clinical updates, science news, plus some of the coolest people in our profession. Stream at MyVetCandy 24/7 on YouTube, iTunes, and most other video platforms.
I think that's a wonderful way to kind of go back into my previous question, just touching on different programs that may be out there, whether it's debt relief related or just like you were talking about with the, you know, the stimulus. Are there things out there that you're aware of that our listeners may be unaware of that they could tap into as kind of like an assistance to either, you know, if it's different things dealing with work incentives to pay off student loans or whatnot? Do you have anything specific that you're aware of that you can maybe share with our listeners?
Yes. So the one thing that I will mention is the government has, if you have government loans and you work for various government agencies, there are incentives that as long as you work for the company or in whatever agency it is, they will pay all or a portion of your student loans. There are income limits. There are limited amounts that they will pay, but they will continue to pay your student loans. That will be very helpful towards paying down whatever outstanding balance that you have. My brother-in-law, in fact, worked for the VA hospital and was part of that plan for a good number of years until he got to a position that was too high of a level and they didn't offer that for him anymore. But it really saved him a lot of money. I think he did that for 6 or 7 years. Think about 6 or 7 years worth of payments that you don't need to make and what a dent that would make on your student loans while also freeing up some income for you to meet some of your other financial goals.
Yeah, absolutely. In case someone's listening and they didn't listen to our previous episode, I was completely unaware that with the high demand for veterinarians right now, that there's places that are offering to pay back your student loan for, you know, X amount of years if you, you know, work for their practice or pay a portion of it. In my mind, when we were in school, you either, you know, had to enlist with the military of some shape or form for that kind of, you know, agreement. There really wasn't anything out there regarding that kind of, you know, opportunity. And I'm glad that there's things that are popping up like that, because I know, man, there's so many people that would have, you know, jumped at that chance to be able to go work somewhere for a couple of years and have their debt, you know, burden kind of lifted off. So just know that there's things out there that can assist you if you're, you know, still listening and kind of feel overwhelmed with things.
So Jessica, you if I can interrupt for a second, you were talking about ways to reduce your debt. There are also people in positions where their income might have been affected and they can't meet their obligations, including their student debt. And there's also programs where you can reach out to your lender and request either a deferment, which would mean a whole, you don't have to make any payments right now, or forbearance, which means you only have to pay the interest. If this is a short-term, you know, little hiccup in your income, and you'll be able to get back to it as soon as you're able to, months or even a year or something along those lines, this can help ease some cash flow so that you don't fall behind on things. You're actually working with the lender to relieve your burden as opposed to just ignoring the lender.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. We're not even in a situation where I'd say that finances are stressful, but I will admit that when I open the mailbox and see a bill of any shape or form, it's like, oh man, like, you know, it's not what you want to see. And so I can only imagine being put in a situation where, you know, you get those calls or you get those letters for loan payments and you know that you can't meet them. So just to know that there's other options versus just ignoring it. We know that that's not the best thing to do, but sometimes it feels like the only thing we could do, whether it's because we're embarrassed or we really just don't even know, you know, that there's other options out there. So I'm glad that you mentioned that. And, you know, we could encourage our listeners to open that communication with their lenders and just ask, you know, what your options are, what if there's something that y'all could set up, you know, to create that temporary lessening of whatever, you know, strain you're facing, instead of just kind of, you know, act like it's not happening, ignore it.
You're right. I mean, when you think about growing up, your parents probably told you you're going to get in more trouble for trying to cover up what you did rather than what you actually did. And it's along the same lines. The worst thing you can do is put your head in the sand when you have problems like this. I understand feeling a little bit of shame or being embarrassed, but the reality is that most lenders will work with you. They have loaned you the money. They expect the money to be paid back, but they also have a vested interest in keeping the relationship alive, because if you either stop paying or once you're done paying, you decide to use another lender, they lose money. That's how they make money, is by lending you money and getting the interest. Most lenders are more than willing to work with you if they can keep you as a customer, keep your loan current, even if it means being flexible and losing a little bit of short-term income, if they know that over the long term, they're going to ultimately get their money back.
Yeah.
So don't be afraid to reach out to them. Get ahead of it rather than wait for them to come find you.
And you just made me think of it as like a veterinary and client perspective. You know, we all have those clients that, well, maybe not, because I'm in a really small town. I don't practice any longer, but where I did, you know, we always had some clients that could not, you know, afford whatever. And, you know, my boss felt bad, and so they let them charge and that kind of scenario. And you always have a handful that kind of just like disappear. And so you're constantly sending out invoices and calling and, you know, just trying to open that communication again. And all we want is to be able to keep that relationship, you know, and in most situations, well, you're able to work something out, whether it's maybe collecting a little bit less or whatever it may be. But the bottom line is we don't want to lose that client. And so it's the same concept. And we know how annoying it is when they avoid us. So what are you going to say?
I have a small practice that I've been practicing for almost 30 years. But about 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, I left the firm I was with and I opened my own practice. And I've built that practice on relationships. And I am happy to be flexible with people. And what I found is that the karma of being flexible with someone that I can help out in a way or a current client, I get paid dividends with referrals, or they don't even hesitate to come back to me for something more than what I was typically doing for them. And I think the lenders feel something similar. Obviously, you're not getting that small town feel with the lender. They're generally larger, but they understand the importance of the relationship. So I do think they're happy to work with you.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy. Vet Candy IRL is an exciting podcast from the hearts, minds, and mouths of Shannon Gregoire, Tatiana Rogers, and Lexi Rodriguez. The show celebrates inspirational role models and focuses on empowerment and equality. Check it out on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and more.
So that's actually a great way for us to kind of wrap things up. You were mentioning, you know, your breakaway from where you were working prior. The first thing I questioned when I was reading your bio, because you're located in New Jersey, do you offer services to, is it just your local clients? Do you offer services to people in other, you know, states? If we have listeners that, you know, would be interested in working closer with you, is that an option outside of New Jersey in the area that you serve?
Yes. Because of geographic location, a large portion of my practice is New Jersey based, but I have clients in probably 30 states and I file taxes in various states as well and do consulting work. So yes, outside of the New Jersey area, if I can help the client, I will do that regardless of the geographic area.
Great. And if someone's listening and they are interested in contacting you or getting more information, how would they go about doing that?
They can go to my website, which is gazellaconsulting.com, spelled G-A-Z-A-L-E-H, and then the full word consulting.com. They can call me at 609-443-1910, or they can email me at paul@gazellaconsulting.com, and I'm happy to help anybody who's interested.
Perfect. And I'm curious, this is just random facts, but roughly, what would you say your percentage of clientele or within the veterinary field?
It's not a large portion of my clientele, but most of their needs are not unique to the other types of businesses that I work with.
Yeah, that makes sense. I know that I'm no longer within the practicing realm of things, but I have such a heart for our profession. And it seems like with your love of animals, you know, that kind of translates to our field from you and you just being here today and giving your time to our listeners to be able to further educate them. I was just curious. I know a lot of my clients are veterinarians because we understand each other and we understand the struggles that we have. So
you mentioned my love of animals. My two employees, as my family refers to it, are my two dogs that are usually sleeping behind me. But I did put them back in the bedroom because I didn't want the barking that usually ensues. But yes, I do love animals.
Okay, so perfect question to wrap it up on. What kind of dogs do you have?
They are both lab mixes. Both of them are rescues. We have a neighbor a few doors down that fosters puppies for adopting. And whenever she has them, she calls us over. And we fell in love with Charlie. Well, I should say I fell in love with Charlie. And we added him to our lives about 2 years ago. And then I have Lola, who we adopted from through a local shelter. But I think she came up from Tennessee, and she's a lab mix rescue that she's my 12-year-old who needs to know where I am at all times. Otherwise, she is not happy.
I love that name, Lola. I have a heart for rescues. Well, I don't have dogs. I have cats, and I only have one now. All of them have been rescues, and most of them I've accumulated during vet school, ironically, I know. But it's hard not to leave without acquiring a couple.
I understand that. I mean, we have a discussion regularly in my household. Can we adopt another dog? And I think three is a fair amount for me to manage because a lot of it falls on me. And my family is fantastic. I don't want to throw them under the bus, but I'm the one that gets up in the morning and walks them, and it's a lot to manage.
Yes, it definitely can be. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on, and I know our listeners are going to, you know, walk away just feeling like they have something under their belt, you know, to go off of. And again, I know it's not the funnest topic, but it's one that desperately needs to be had, not just within our profession, but across the board. And so I'm very grateful that you took time out of your busy day to talk with us, and hope to have you back in the future.
Great. I appreciate that. And I'm happy to help any listeners that have any questions. I hope they don't hesitate to reach out so I can answer a question or two or help them in whatever their financial endeavors are.
Yeah, y'all take them up on that. Play back and listen to how you can get in touch with them, and use the resources that we're, you know, connecting y'all with. That's the whole point of this show. And so until next time, thank you for listening. This is Living Well with Dr. Jessica, and we'll see you soon. Bye.
Vet Candy.
Vet Candy.
Vet Candy.
It's Vet Candy Radio.